Welcome to the Bucks Collective Show, which could be the greatest minds ever assembled to talk Bucks football. We'll let you be the judge. I'm Scott Reynolds from Pewter Report, and each week I'll be joined by Fox Sports NFL reporter Greg Allman and Tampa Bay Times longtime Bucks beat writer Rick Stroud. See, I did that, Rick, long time, because you're the oldest.
Hey, pal, look, I have to wear that badge. I can't run from it anymore. Not that many years behind me, so feel free to pick up that mantle when I'm done.
You got it.
When I'm the young guy on the panel, what's that, Greg? I said, when I'm the young guy in the panel, it's not a good thing.
The Bucks Collective, brought to you by HMA and presented by Prize Picks, America's number one sports app. Sign up for Prize Picks, and when you use the code HMA, new users can play $5 and get $150 if you win your first lineup. It's that easy. We'll talk more about our Prize Picks, and we'll have a Prize Picks opportunity for you guys to join in on a little bit later in the show. But thanks for joining us. Make sure that you hit the subscribe button here. We're at Bucks Collective on the YouTube channel, and we're excited to talk some Bucks football, not just tonight, but all year long, and even in the offseason. We're going to go year-round talking Bucks football every Tuesday night, with one exception. Next Tuesday, the Bucks have a night practice at Tuesday from 7 o'clock. We're all going to be there, so we're going to have next Tuesday's show start at 5:30 instead. But otherwise, 7 o'clock Eastern. So make sure you hit the subscribe button at Bucks Collective, and make sure you also hit notifications. That'll let you know when we go live. Gentlemen, training camp hasn't even started yet, and there's been a ton of news.
Yeah.
From Central.
Let's ease on into the season. You know, they don't practice till Wednesday. What could happen? I don't know. Monday, Vita Vea says he wants to be traded.
Yeah.
When was the last time that? Keyshawn Johnson, maybe? I don't even remember when the last time a player said he wanted to be traded from here. And then, you know, Baker Mayfield does Baker Mayfield things and bets on himself, and he doesn't have a new contract extension, going to play out final year of his deal and see what happens after the season. So, yeah, not much is going on right now.
You know, when you look at Baker Mayfield, he put that kind of self-imposed training camp deadline to get a new deal done. Greg, let's start with you, and then we'll go to you, Rick. Did you think that the Buccaneers were going to meet that deadline, or did you think that they were going to just kind of force Baker to play out his contract year?
Yeah, Bucs don't always like when deadlines are forced upon them, first and foremost. And I felt like for this to get done, one side had to budge. One side had to give. We don't know what these two numbers are, how close they are, but I think both of them seem far apart enough that you needed one side to say, you know what, I just want to get this done.
Yeah,
I'll give up $3 million a year to make it happen. That hasn't happened. So now you have both sides taking on some risk. The Bucks, if Baker has a great season, will be that much more expensive to keep. And for Baker, if things don't go well, if he gets hurt, or if things are bad enough that Todd Bowles gets fired, he doesn't know that a new coach will want him as a quarterback the same way that the current regime does. So it adds a lot to how much is on the line for Baker Mayfield, for Todd Bowles, for everybody involved with this.
Yeah. And Rick?
Yeah, you know, I kind of want to take a step back a little bit. We'll talk about Baker, obviously, and the other guys. But, I mean, let's just look at what's happened this offseason if you're a Buccaneer fan or somebody in that locker room. And I think that's the biggest thing, right? What about the culture of this football team? Mike Evans decides to leave Tampa Bay and go to San Francisco for less money. And that was a huge blow, and we all know the reasons why he did it. But nonetheless, that's a tough deal. And then you have a player like Vita Vea who's still, even at 31, you know, a key piece to this defense. I mean, I talked to Todd Bowles last year. He said he's the one guy I cannot replace on defense. Yeah. I've got other guys I can plug. I don't have anybody like Vita Vea. And now you have, not only is he not have a contract extension, but he's saying he wants to be traded. He wants out of here. How does that play in the locker room? And he's represented by an agent that represents other players as well in this team. And then Baker, you know, if you're not going to reward Baker Mayfield, right, after what he came in here after Tom Brady, the job he has done, beloved by everybody, wants to make Tampa his forever home, even if he's not playing here. And that doesn't happen. I guess, the question is, like, what is going to be the residual of that in that locker room? You know, you have, and I know they're all individual cases, and I'm not pointing fingers at Jason Light or anybody in particular, because we don't know the numbers, right?
Yeah.
Maybe this is good business for them. And it's not the worst thing for Baker to bet on himself and be in this kind of situation as far as, you know, he's got more shoulderships. But this is a, you know, this is a decent sized story that could go either way. You could have guys extremely motivated, but we don't know how it ends with Vita Vea. Yeah. And we know that Mike Evans has to be replaced maybe in the aggregate. We don't know how that works out. Mm-hmm. And now you have Baker Mayfield, who could be one and done. And do you really want the guy next year looking for a new home if, say, Matthew Stafford retires and he wants to go to L.A. and play for the Rams? And we can get into franchise tags and things like that. But I just think this is a terrible way to start the new season. If you're a Buccaneer fan, if you're even somebody in that locker room, there has to be a lot of talk. And I know, you know, these agents that represent other players on this team, they were getting a lot of phone calls today, too. I don't think it's a good vibe right now.
I don't think it's the death knell for this team right off the bat, right? And I do think I'm going to take a little bit of a different tactic on this surprise, gentlemen, because we have these conversations all the time at the team facility where we go in different directions. But if I'm Baker Mayfield, this is my third opportunity to have a contract done with the Buccaneers, just really in just a few short years, right? He signed a one-year deal, the prove-it deal, then the three-year $100 million deal, and then this is the third time. So he's already dealt with Mike Greenberg a couple times, Jason Light as well. And if I'm Baker Mayfield, I look at the fact that, well, when I was here, this team took care of Chris Godwin and gave him a fair market deal coming off of a gruesome ankle injury, knowing that last year wasn't going to be anywhere close to the Chris Godwin they were hoping that he would be, paying him that much money, right?
Sure.
He also saw Mike Evans have to play on his contract year twice. This is a future Bucks Ring of Honor member. This is a future Hall of Famer. This is a future Bucks Mount Rushmore guy that had to play in his contract year twice. Super Bowl champion Chris Godwin, Super Bowl champion Antoine Winfield Jr., second round pick who had to play in his contract year as well. And he balled out. And what did Jason Light and Mike Greenberg do every time? They paid those guys handsomely. Shoot, they made Winfield the highest paid defensive back in the NFL for a minute. So if I'm Baker Mayfield, I go into this saying, I'm going to show you guys, it's going to cost you a fortune, but I don't think that it's going to rub him the wrong way to where he wants to leave. And I think, Rick, you said it early, he wants to stay here in Tampa. It's just going to drive the value up. But am I wrong about this, Greg?
No, you think about the one thing I think that works in the Bucs' favor is that Baker likes where he is. Yeah. And he knows what he has in Tampa. So even if this plays out and he lets himself go to free agency in March, there are teams that might offer him more money, but they also offer him uncertainty. He just doesn't know where he's going. I think he's had enough bad steps in the past. You go to Carolina and it doesn't work out there. You see how things ended in Cleveland when he had 4 years there. What he has here in Tampa is something he's settled into, and the familiarity and the comfort of that has a value. I don't know how many million that translates to in terms of taking less, just to know what you're getting into. But I think there's a value in that, and I think the Bucs are probably banking on that a little bit.
Yeah, I would just say that, while he likes it here, Baker's always, like I said, bet on himself. And, you know, do we know Todd Bowles is going to be the head coach next year? And if he's not, okay, do we know the next head coach wants Baker Mayfield as his quarterback?
If it's Zach Robinson, I'm guessing he would.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I see where you're going there. Yeah. They swung and let that go with Liam Cohen. They wouldn't do it twice. But you're assuming that Zach Robinson has a great year like Liam Cohen did, and that attractive as a head coach. But if it went that way, sure. Maybe your head coach is on staff. But if he's not, right, then you've got to marry the coach and the quarterback in this league like we always do. And so, there is nothing guaranteed in this league, and Baker knows that better than anybody. He thought he had his home here. He may still believe that. Like I said, he loves the community, loves the team, but we don't know what's going to happen. He could, the way Baker has played, he's one of only three quarterbacks to play the last 51 games, right, with Josh Allen and Jared Goff. What if he doesn't have that luck? What if it runs out? Because we know this guy, the way he plays and throws his body around, he's not Josh Allen, but he thinks he is, and he gets hurt. He had, 8 or separate injuries last year on the injury report or something like that. We saw the quarterback series where he was much more beat up than we even realized.
Yeah.
A lot of things can happen in a year where you don't have the next year on the books, right?
Yeah.
And that puts an immense amount of pressure on the player, on the team, on everybody. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to dice this up. I think certainty and continuity wins in the NFL. I think when you know who your quarterback and your coach are, that's a good thing. So it's just a little bit of, you know, uncertainty on both sides. I don't think it'll affect his play. Now, that's the one thing we heard over and over again. How many times, Greg and Scott, did we hear, oh, we don't have any doubt that he'll play his ass off. He'll play his ass off. And, right. I believe that. Yeah. Maybe even harder now. Yeah. But, you know, if it doesn't pan out to where they win a bunch of games,
yeah,
and he's the reason they win, now no one has a contract and maybe you have a new head coach. I don't know.
Greg, when you look at Baker Mayfield, and the hope is that Zach Robinson can come in and kind of be Liam Cohen 2.0, and maybe with a wide zone offense, right? That the running game they're trying to implement that works so successfully in Atlanta. But if it does work out, you know, I look at this as, if I'm the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, what version of Baker Mayfield am I going to get with this new contract? Am I going to get the 41 touchdown, 4,500 yard, 71.4% completion percentage guy that I got with Liam Cohen? Is that the guy that I'm going to pay? And if that's the case, it's that first number is going to start with a 5, and the next number might be a 5 as well, right? I mean, he might be a top 10 paid quarterback in terms of that, joining the likes of Trevor Lawrence, et cetera, right? But then you look at the Baker Mayfield last year that Rick was alluding to, that we all saw, especially with the quarterback series on Netflix, the banged up Baker that wasn't very effective. And the running game wasn't working as it normally would have worked for Baker had the offensive line been healthy and Bucky Irving been healthy. And so there were so many dominoes that kind of fell against Baker and the Bucs last year. But is that what the Buccaneers could kind of be waiting for? It's like you had a 28 touchdown season with Dave Canales, a 41 touchdown, then a 26 touchdown. Which Baker Mayfield are we going to get? Is that how the Bucs are looking at this?
That's kind of the big question, because the guy you saw in 2024 with Liam Cohen with a healthy offensive line, you'd want to pay that guy $50 million a year. But the same guy, Baker Mayfield, in the second half of last year didn't look like a $50 million quarterback.
Yeah.
Some of that is out of his control. His health is part of it, the health of his offensive line, the health of the receivers, the continuity of the offense. I think when you look now, because the Bucs have had 5 coordinators in 5 years, there's so many ups and downs that come with that. And for Baker Mayfield, it's sad, but that's all he knows. He's had a right. different coordinator pretty much every year his entire career. So he's used to adjusting on the fly, but he has to hope that Zach Robinson's offense looks and produces a lot closer to his friend Liam Cohen's.
Yeah.
And doesn't remind people of the predictable offense that they struggled with Josh Bajor that got Josh fired last year. So right. it could go either way. If Baker looks like second half 25 Baker, that doesn't bode well for his contract future or yeah. for anyone with the Bucs.
Are we expecting any surprises tomorrow? Are we expecting to see Baker Mayfield in an orange jersey walking out there to practice and actually participate tomorrow? We know that Vita Vea probably won't be doing that. But are we sure that the Baker Mayfield he reported today, practice starts tomorrow, we're going to be out there tomorrow, but is Baker Mayfield going to be a participant? That is the expectation, is it not, guys?
I think so. I mean, you think about what he said. I mean, Baker said he'd be there. And again, yeah. he said it's not going to change things. So again, Vita Vea might very well be there, kind of standing there, arms crossed, not doing anything at all. I look back, and as hurt as Baker was so much last season, I think he had 2 practices total that he right. didn't practice at all. So again, if physical absolute half his body being dinged up isn't going to keep him out, I don't think this would. I think he wants to project an image of nothing has changed. I am still this team's quarterback. My goal is to get them to win. And if that gets me a big contract at the end of the year, that's when they'll deal with that. I think he wants to focus on now on the field football, and changing how he approaches practice doesn't help with that.
Let's change gears to Vita Vea, because that was actually kind of the bigger story This was kind of like a sidebar story today. It's big. Don't get it twisted. We're talking about the franchise quarterback here, but at the same time, we're expecting Baker Mayfield to practice and play and be the quarterback this year. It's a little uncertain with Vita Vea, who came out and said he wants a trade. Is that posturing, Rick? Is that just a tactic to, and will he be placated? Will he be satisfied with a pay bump, or is he really angling for a multi-year contract extension given the fact he's 31?
It sounds like he wanted to be a buck for life, whatever that means these days. You know, they made Mike Evans a buck for life. It lasted 2 years and they went to San Francisco. So, you know, life continued, but for Vita Vea at 31, I think he understood and understands that, you know, that clock's ticking pretty loud at defensive tackle at that age. Now, is he underpaid? Yeah. I mean, at $17 million a year, he's not near the top 10 yet. And I think he's a top 10 defensive tackle in this league. It just so happens that the guys that got those big raises, most of them are under the age of 30, and he's not. But, man, you look at the comparative numbers in the last 2 years, and I wrote some down here. You know, Vea has had 104 pressures, 29 with double teams and 11 sacks. Then you get a guy like Jeffrey Simmons with 109 pressures, 26 double teams and 17 sacks. Dexter Lawrence, 70 pressures, 10 sacks. Those guys are younger, but Vita Vea has been dominant at his position without question in that same range. And so, you know, what can he hope for? Well, if he said that I'm going to hold out, I don't think he wants a $50,000 fine. They let him hold in mandatory minicamp. What I'm curious about, and we'll find out, I guess, tomorrow, are they going to let him do that again? Because if you're the Buccaneers, what's the upside of saying, because he said, I want to be traded. He didn't say, let's keep talking. I don't want to practice until I have a deal. Yeah. No, I'm done with the Buccaneers. I want to go someplace else. And certainly there's going to be a lot of teams, I'm sure, that are calling the Bucs already and asking them if this is a possibility, because he's going to make any team instantly better as he would the Tampa Bay Bucs. How do they replace or play without him? I know they've had to do it at times before. Right. But Ruben Bain isn't as good. Yaya Diaby isn't as good. Your linebackers aren't as good. And they've got two new ones there probably. So this is such a centerpiece literally of their defense that I don't know how you always want to be able to back a guy out. And you want to give him a way out when he kind of backs up against the wall. So he has a path home, if you will.
Right. Yeah.
What's the path here? They keep talking. I mean, he hasn't said, I want to keep talking. I didn't get what I wanted. He said, I want out. And that's a different mood altogether.
Yeah, Greg, we've seen Vita Vea play last year, all 17 games. And he only missed one game the previous season. So he's been a picture of health ever since he has been training with Ndamukong Suh. Right?
Yeah.
Interesting how Sue kind of came out with that video. According to this guy, like immediately afterwards, and Sue being the financial advice guy, I'm sure that he probably told Vita, what are you doing, man? Come on. Like you need to get your coin and get it now. But let me ask you this. We've seen Vita Vea play without Kalijah Kancey, Greg, but we have not seen Kalijah Kancey play without Vita Vea. And this is a player too, that first round draft pick, 2023 draft. They just picked up his fifth year option. He's playing in a fourth year of his contract right now. They need to see him be healthy and productive this year in order to really see that fifth-year option. We saw this team pick up the fifth-year option for Vernon Hargreaves and then cut him. I don't think they're going to cut Kalijah Kancey, but you know, if you're going to be paying all that money for Kalijah Kancey next year on the fifth-year option, he's got to produce. What is like life if, let's say, Vita Vea decides to hold out maybe the first 7 games? What's it like for Ruben Bain and Yaya Diaby and Kalijah Kancey without him?
Yeah, I mean, he makes life easier for everyone around him. And, I mean, he's been that anchor that they've built their defense around since before Todd Bowles got here.
Yeah.
So it's all Todd Bowles has known as well. So when he talks about him being irreplaceable, that's a great place to start. As much change as they want in their front seven, he's the constant. He's where it starts. And you can have Kancey. And I think they've added some bigger bodies. I think they definitely made a point this offseason to add size. There's A'shaun Robinson. You add him. You add Raheem Nunez-Roches as a bigger guy, even DeMonte Capehart. Okay, you add a rookie with some size. None of them are Vita Vea, though. They're all complementary pieces to help Vita and work with him. I don't think they could entertain the possibility of trading him without acknowledging that they'd be a much worse defense, especially against the run, without him. Even if you got a D-tackle back as part of a trade, right, it wouldn't be Vita. And I think they know that. So, again, we look back on this now, and they clearly kind of misjudged Mike Evans and how much he wanted to stay.
Yeah.
And I think they're trusting right now that Vita Vea will play out this year. But there's that uncomfortable, what if he doesn't? And what do they do, and how do they handle that? Because every day that passes and you haven't traded for him and you're still assuming he's the core leader, right, anchor of this defense, you're counting on that, and you lose some leverage with that as well.
Yeah. Rick, I've covered this team for 31 years. You, a little bit longer, my friend. The defensive...
Not much longer, 37.
Not much longer, just a little.
Let's not put me in a grave just yet. 1 foot, maybe.
Yeah. So I look at it like this. I've never seen the nose tackle position this stacked in Tampa Bay before. That if there's ever a good time that this is going to happen, you do have A'shaun Robinson, who, yeah, if we can just like admire the mugshot here, I mean, my God. I mean, I'm scared to death of this guy. He's a nice guy. We've interviewed him, right? But I mean, you see this
mugshot. Look at that face. Yeah.
I mean, you talk about like ass kicker. Like that's what this guy is. That's what he wakes up wanting to do. And I'm here for it. But you have A'shaun Robinson. You bring back Nacho from the Super Bowl team. You've got DeMonte Capehart, as Greg was talking about, fifth-round pick, who's like athletic as all get out, just hasn't lived up to that, you know, that talent yet. You've got Jason Jones, who I think we've all seen him out there. He's a freak, 6'6", 335 pounds. Hasn't done anything yet, but still, I'm anxious to see what he can do. You have Elijah Simmons, who, you know, played a couple snaps last year as well. You've got some bodies there. Vita Vea is a unicorn, though. We all acknowledge that. Even at 31, he's better than all those guys. But having said that, this team has invested big-term money into some aging players. And we've all seen the likes of Simeon Rice literally injure the shoulder, fall off the map at age 31 in Tampa. We've seen Shaq Barrett in year two of his 4-year mega extension tear the Achilles and never be the same at age 30. We've seen Jason Pierre-Paul win a Super Bowl the next year in 2021, hurt the shoulder in week one, and at age 32 was never the same. We saw Ryan Jensen get a 4-year deal in his early 30s, get injured on the first day of training camp, career-ending injury. He's done. Ali Marpet, you know, was a surprise retirement. You know, he probably should still be playing for this team. There's been a lot of comings and goings right around the age of 30. Marpet was by choice. The others were really by injury. But, you know, we talked about unicorns and Vita Vea being one, but is he a Cam Hayward, Rick, who can play for 5 or 6 more years at a really high level? Is he a Calais Campbell? We don't know, though, do we? Is there a risk in saying, all right, Vita, you win, here's a 3-year deal, and cross your fingers?
Well, look, there's risk anytime a player, in my experience, Scott, and you know this, having covered the league nearly as long as I have, guys don't get more productive and less injured in this league as they get older. They just don't. It's very rare. And you mentioned there are unicorns. There are guys that seemingly play forever at a high level. But the guys you mentioned behind him, they're all in their 30s too. You know, and I love Raquez Nunez-Roches and what he brings to the team and the energy. But at the end of the day, what was his market? Yeah. You know, was A'shaun Robinson turning down bigger offers from other teams to come to Tampa? Like, I don't know what they have in the tank. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure that that's the answer. That, well, yeah, it's good that you have veteran players behind veteran players. I think that's always a better recipe than guys getting their first swing at it. Sometimes if you're backing up with rookies, we've seen that, right? We've seen how that goes. I think they're a different defense. And the other thing to ask is too, and maybe this factored into their thinking with Vita, and I gotta go back to Todd Bowles, but like Vita Vea is perfect for this defense.
Yeah.
This defense, right? The 3-4, where he's playing inside right now. If everything changes a year from now, maybe not so much. You know what I mean? Maybe guy comes in here and wants to run a 4-3, a totally different defense. Maybe he's not a perfect fit. So all of that has to be weighed as well as whatever his demands are. I just go back to, like, how do you get out of this, right? Us talking. Is Vita Vea playing for the Buccaneers this year? Is he?
Yeah,
I think so.
You think so?
I don't think he's got a lot of leverage. I really don't.
You know? Yeah, it might not be a comfortable year, but I think he's there. I mean, again, maybe if he absolutely threatens to not play at all, takes on fines, is gone for weeks, maybe they trade him. They know how much they need him. They know how different they are without him.
Yeah.
And yet they don't want to pay him beyond this year. So there's this really thin strip of land that they're trying to stay on without paying him and without losing him.
I understand what the Bucs are doing. What I'm talking about is the guy playing the trade card. I think you're telling everybody in that locker room that I don't want to be here. They don't like me. They don't value me. Let me move on. If that's truly what he means, if it's just a negotiating ploy, very few people play that card unless, you know, if you got to mean it, because they may say, all right, we're sending you to the Titans, you know, or of course they have Jefferson, but I'm just saying, like, maybe you go to a losing team, you know, and a bad team, and, you know, that's that. So just be careful what you wish for. I'm trying to figure out how to get out of this. And all we can come up with is Vita has a change of heart and realizes that he has no leverage and decides I'll ball anyway. Yeah. And those kind of players aren't productive either. You know, disgruntled players we've dealt with.
Right. Well, and I don't confuse Vita Vea with Devin White at any point, but right. But there's right. a danger in overplaying your hand publicly.
Yeah,
and that's what Devin White did. And Devin White, you know, didn't think he should have to stop at $11 million with 1 year. Wanted a trade just as publicly as probably even more publicly as Vita has.
Had but to how stay. Did he play, Greg? When he played that card, like what was his hustle? What was his
right.
his you know, how many plays did he quit on? Like, it's not the same, you know. Yeah. Like, it's not the same. If you feel you're undervalued, this team really doesn't want me, but they're forcing me because I have no options, and I'm going to take my $17 million. But I'm not that guy anymore, you know. And he's going to sit in the corner. We don't talk to him much anyway.
Yeah.
It's just different, man. It's different when a guy says, I don't want to be here. And everybody's looking at him to say, see, he really doesn't want to be here. You know, what are we writing on Mondays if they're giving up 200 yards on the ground? I mean,
yeah, but guys, is there a world, though, where you know, Baker goes up to him and says, listen, man, hey, I'm in the same boat you are. We both have C's in our chest. Let's just ball out, man. Like pick your lip off the ground, stop pouting, and let's play football. I'm not saying that Vita Vea is or will be pouting. I do not want to be pummeled by number 50. I want to make that clear right now. I'm just saying, like if there is some disgruntledness, and yeah, sure. I mean, when we don't get our way with things, that, you know, that's a natural human reaction. But is there any solace, guys, that he could look across the locker room and see Baker Mayfield suiting up and saying, let's go kick some ass today, and say, all right, me too, I'm in.
Yeah, you hope it's contagious in that direction, and that's how it goes, because we already knew there was a leadership void with Mike Evans gone, with Lavonte David gone, and now two of your most logical locker room leaders in Baker and in Vita both have uncertain futures. They both want to be there, but the team creates that uncertainty and that hesitation by not giving them everything they want, basically. And that could manifest itself in both of them being motivated and both of them playing at a higher level to get that contract they think they deserve.
Yeah.
But it can go other ways too.
It can. You know, it's interesting. It'd be interesting if Prize Picks had like a will Vita Vea, you know, play this season, you know, type of more or less. How many games will
be? 30 games. Yeah.
More or less, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Prize Picks real quick here, shall we? We've got some picks. It's really simple. This is America's number one sports app, folks. It's super easy to use. You're basically assembling a lineup where you need to have at least two players that you're you know, putting in your lineup. They have to be from different teams. It's really fun to play. And when we get to fall, folks, and there's going to be, you know, NHL and NBA when it starts up later again, and you've got, you know, you're knee deep in the NFL, it's so much fun because you can cross pollinate your lineup with different sports, with different players. So it doesn't have to be all just football. But here's one right here, Greg, and I'm just going to preface this by saying, when you go to Prize Picks and you sign up using promo code HMA, new users are going to get $5. And if you hit on that very first lineup that you put in, you're going to get $150. So it's a huge incentive for you to make sure you pick a very easy lineup to hit. And you can adjust the odds for each of these players that you're going to select. And you're going to hit more or less. It's a great, easy app to use. What do we have here for this first hypothetical lineup here, Greg?
Yeah, there's three things here. And this is a fun time of year because you can look at season-long props and over-unders on how many yards, how many touchdowns. You got Aaron Rodgers sitting at 3,099.5 yards for the season. And that probably starts as a question for, is Aaron Rodgers healthy at his age for a full season? If he is, that probably feels like an over there.
Yeah.
DK Metcalf, 57.5 catches, okay? Rico Dowdle, a new, obviously we know Kenny Gainwell's here in Tampa. Rico Dowdle takes his spot in Pittsburgh. His over-under, 749.5 rushing yards. So you're looking at the entire season and trying to see how it unfolds. It feels like a coin flip because they want you to know it could go both ways. But if you think you are bullish about this Steelers offense staying together, those are three opportunities to take overs and ride on it.
It's really fun. It's easy to play. And they do a great job over there at Prize Picks. Again, use the promo code HMA when you sign up. New users, play $5, get $150 if you win your first lineup at America's number one sports pick app. All right, gentlemen, we're going to dive into offseason moves. And you mentioned Kenny Gainwell. This is a player that I loved. I'm going to brag on my draft scouting process here. I love this guy going back to Memphis in 2019. And he didn't play the COVID year. He had a couple of relatives that actually passed away from COVID. So he only played 1 year at Memphis. And of course, Memphis was a running back factory. Tony Pollard, Damari Williams, a lot of running backs came from Memphis. And he's one of those that has certainly had his share of success in the league. He was actually the Steelers MVP last year. And that's on a team with TJ Watt, Cam Hayward, Aaron Rodgers, right? He wasn't even the leading rusher. But this is a guy that really has wowed in the offseason. He catches the ball like a receiver. He has the speed that would be a perfect fit for the wide zone that Zach Robinson is looking to implement, right? We know this team can gap block. They can man block with the downhill between the tackle run game. But they want to diversify the running game because it got a little stagnant last year under Josh Grizzard. Of course, those guards missing in action were a big reason why as well. But Greg, Kenneth Gainwell is a player that got an awful long look-see and really impressed while Bucky Irving was out. And I think Todd Bowles said it best at the NFL annual meeting. He's not number two. He is 1B to Bucky's 1A. And were you as impressed as I was with what this guy could do with his vision and burst and the skill set that he has?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he finished this year with more yards from scrimmage than Bucky Irving. I think you think about a guy that caught – there were 75 passes last year. He's going to be involved not only in the run game, but in the pass game. Just a weapon they can use all over. Might even be involved in special teams if they let him. I think for them to have Bucky Irving back, to have Sean Tucker back, and to want to go out and spend $7 million a year to bring in Gainwell, you don't do that unless you intend to use that guy a lot.
Yeah.
So I think he's somebody that went under the radar because he's been behind Saquon Barkley and Miles. He's been behind a lot of other 1,000-yard rushers in Philly, had a chance to kind of come into his own in Pittsburgh. You wonder why Pittsburgh would let him go if he's your team MVP. But I think the Bucs were really happy to get him. And if they're kind of hedging their bets, not knowing whether Bucky Irving's going to be like his rookie year or with the inconsistencies he had last year, paying that money to get Kenny Gainwell here is a good way to kind of cover that and give them another option they can trust in the backfield.
Rick, when we looked at the Twitter feed or the Instagram feed for Rashad White, he couldn't wait to get out of Tampa and probably burn some of his leverage because he was making it very clear he wanted to play with his college teammate at Arizona State, Jaden Daniels, again.
Yeah.
And when I look at the contracts here, I think it's a 1-year, $4 million deal for Rashad White.
Two.
Two-year?
One year, $2 million deal.
$2 million with up to $4 million in potential bonuses and incentives.
Yeah.
That's not the deal that Kenneth Gainwell got. He got a two-year, $14 million deal. Rick, you don't pay backup running back $7 million.
No.
Especially when he's the number one highest paid running back in Tampa right now. Shoot, Sean Tucker is making more money than Bucky Irving is. He's the number three back. What did that contract tell you when you saw that right away in free agency that Gainwell got an average of $7 million a year?
It tells me they're hedging their bets on Bucky Irving. And look, I think that Bucky will be better suited in this offense than he was. And I know he can run the inside zone. To me, this will be more of an outside zone running team. I think they got to be careful with Bucky from the standpoint of, even though, his running style, he likes to run over people. I compare him to Warrick Dunn, but Warrick Dunn never took a hit straight on.
Yes.
Warrick was slippery. He got down. Right. He knew when the journey was over. This guy wants to run through you, run over you. And we saw what happened. He was hurt for the first time last year, I suppose. It's still unbelievable to me that you played football that long. But, whether it was the foot or the shoulder, which was a major injury. So my guess is that this is a way to preserve Bucky Irving a little bit. Maybe not give him 20 touches a game. Maybe it's 15. Maybe he's your Barry Bonds, right? Mm-hmm. He's the guy that comes up and can knock it out of the park a little bit. Kenneth Gainwell is a very sturdy back, very, very durable. What's interesting is they don't have the physical dude that even Rashad White was. They have three guys that are all about the same size. And I know Sean Tucker maybe by default has turned into their short yardage and goal line guy, but he's not the biggest damn back in the world either. Yeah. So they're going to have to survive a little bit with these guys, but they're also interchangeable, which is good because you're not changing your offense. You can run any play with any of them. So, Gainwell, that's not backup money. And I think it's the signal that we plan on, truly, you hear Skip Pete, go with a hot hand. That's not always the case, right? I think they forced Bucky a little bit too much last year when he was healthy.
Especially when Rashad White's ripping off a 39-yard run in the first quarter and then he doesn't see the ball again.
Right. It made no sense. So, I think the realization is there. Whatever issues Bucky had, off the field. But just like we got to cover ourselves here with another running back that can carry the bulk of this if we need him to. And at the very least, you got 1A and 1B, and that's not a bad thing, not a bad way to go.
I think if you look at Atlanta, too, though, if you look at Jack Robinson last year, if you look at the modern 1A, 1B running back combo, I think you saw that in Atlanta where he's got Bijan Robinson, and he's still willing in the fourth quarter to take Bijan out and in the red zone to trust Tyler Algier to be a touchdown guy in short yardage situations. So he's used to having two talented options and trying to get them both involved. Tyler Algier got paid to go to Arizona. Obviously, Bijan Robinson is still probably a top five back in the NFL. Yeah. But I do think he has experience navigating a deep backfield and trying to use what's now even three different options and trying to keep them all involved.
You mentioned three, and even Liam Cohen had problems once Sean Tucker went off in that New Orleans game in game five, right, with a couple of touchdowns and 100 yards and making it look easy against the Saints in that game. It's a great problem to have, but it's a problem nonetheless. There's only one football, and there's three backs that are worthy of carries. And Liam Cohen had problems with that, and I had a chance to talk with Liam at the NFL annual meeting because he and Zach Robinson are actually best friends.
Yeah.
And he said, we've already talked about the pony package. We talked about Tampa Bay personnel, and that might be the remedy to get Sean on the field. And I think Sean grew some as a pass protector last year when he had to play more snaps with Bucky out. And so now you do have three backs that are kind of interchangeable because there's not a tell, right? There's the offense looked different when Rashad Wright was in compared to when Bucky Irving was in terms of what plays they were going to run, how were the running styles. Now it's kind of like the shell game where you have all three guys that kind of do the same thing. They all look about the same. It'll be interesting to see. Let's flip to the defensive side because that's really where this team need a lot of help. And we talked a little bit about A'shaun Robinson being a big body and an ass kicker up front. Alex Anzalone, Greg, is he the most important addition to this Bucs defense this year? Not named Reuben Bain, of course, but just from a free agency standpoint, because he's got some big shoes to fill in Levante David. But then if he has a rookie starting next to him in Josiah Trotter, he's got a play that juggling act of, I got to learn this defense myself, then I got to cover for the mistakes that the rookie might make.
No, I think he absolutely takes the helm from Lavonte David as the leader and kind of the smarts of this defense, who has to get everybody in the right places, has to be a playmaker as well. You know, I think they did well to get him. You know, Detroit, you think about how good Detroit has been. I think they kind of luck out in that, you know, Alex Anzalone's a Florida guy, just wants to kind of come home and retire to Florida to play his last few years here. Yeah. And I think they're trusting that he still has a few years left in the tank. From a leadership standpoint, from a pass coverage standpoint, probably better than what they had last year. It's hard to think about the Bucs losing a legend like Lavonte David and being better at linebacker. But as a position group, I really think they can be. I think you look back now at Lavonte David, We kind of knew he was a step slow. He's kind of admitted to loafing at times, to not playing at his best. So to get – that's probably where the Bucs will be the most – completely new at a position, to have him and Trotter. You could see Christian Roseboom in there. I suppose at some point Gervasio Dennis could get in, but it really will probably be Anzalone as the veteran leader guy running things and putting people in the right spot, and Josiah Trotter being the weapon and the guy they can blitz and kind of use all over. That's an area where they have to get better. So like you said, Anzalone is a crucial part. Wasn't a huge paycheck to come here. Yeah. But somebody that they felt really identified what they needed, gave them still some of the leadership you had with Lavonte from a winning program, a team that's used to getting to the playoffs. And somebody has to step in and take the mantle from Lavonte in the middle of that defense.
Rick, I've talked about a lot in the Peter Report podcast. You know, when you look at this offseason, Bucs fans were shaken by what happened. You know, Todd Bowles didn't get fired. He's not the most popular head coach in franchise history. No one's going to confuse him with Tony Dungy or John Gruden or Bruce Arians, right? Even though he's the fourth best.
Won a lot of division titles.
A lot of division titles, right? But I'm just saying, coming off an 8-9 season and missing out in the playoffs, that wasn't like exactly what the fans were looking for. Then you've got Mike Evans leaving the building. Nobody really thought that could happen.
Yeah.
Then Lavonte David retires. And it's kind of like gut punch after gut punch after gut punch to the fan base. And I don't know about you guys, but we felt at Peter Report the whole mood change on draft night when this team got what we found out was their fourth ranked player on their board at number 15, almost like a Warren Sapp kind of thing all over again. Happens to be from the U. But when they got Reuben Bain from Miami and getting that elite pass rusher at 15, the whole mood changed. This was like the exhale that was needed. This fan base needed to smile and be happy again. And I mean, it just kind of changed the whole vibe, I think, about this team in the offseason. And now it's like Vita Vea, Kalijah Kansi, Yaya Diaby, and Reuben Bain. It's almost like he was that missing piece of the puzzle up front for this team. You kind of see it the same way, that Reuben Bain is going to have that type of impact, at least from a psychological standpoint, to start the season?
Well, if the puzzle doesn't miss a piece like Vita Vea, he might. That might be a different situation if he's gone. I'm still trying to figure out how Reuben Bain Jr. was there at number 15. Somebody still has to explain that to me, because in a league where I know they do all the measurements and, you know, the arm size and all this nonsense, but you also watch the tape. And this guy was maybe the most elite, one or two most elite pass rushers in college football. And he's not just, you know, he's a kid from Miami, from that area that Lavonte David was from, where football isn't just a sport to them, man. It's a lifestyle, you know. Yeah. And he's a serious cat, which you love. But think about, and you can't get away from these comparisons, even though they sound absolutely ridiculous, but just in terms of, the Buccaneers changed when Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks came to this franchise, right? And they changed forever. I don't think either one of these guys you could say are going to go to Canton, Ohio. We haven't seen them play even a practice snap in pads. So I'm not going there yet. But if you have foundational pieces on defense, like an elite edge rusher or pass rusher and an inside linebacker, you know, that can carry you a long way. Those guys are 23 years old. Yes. So presumably they're going to be in this defense playing, you know, aside each other for a very long time. And if they did hit on this, and if they hit on both these guys, and I think, you know, we heard in the offseason that Todd Bowles wanted to get bigger. You were talking about Anzalone a minute ago and Jeremiah Trotter. Well, yeah, you're bigger now. And the reason he wanted to do that was he didn't want to have to commit eight guys to stop the run, you know? And now all of a sudden, Antoine Winfield Jr. isn't just playing center field all day. Yeah. Now you can start, play those chess pieces and move them around and bring some pressure from different areas. But before, you had to commit so damn many guys to stop the run. That's why A'shaun Robinson's here. That's why the larger guys. But, yeah, getting back to Bane, I think he's a defensive rookie of the year candidate, and I haven't seen him take a snap NFL. But I think he could be that good. And if you've got a guy like that in the National Football League that every team has to account for, look how good Yaya Diaby is. Look how good Kalijah Kansi is. Look how no one can run the football on this football team. Like, those are big pieces, man, that just – sometimes you got to get lucky, Scott. They got lucky back in the day when Warren Sapp fell to them. They traded – they could have taken Warren Sapp much earlier and traded down and still got him.
Yeah.
And then came back and got Derek Brooks. So sometimes that's the best pick is just a little bit of luck like that. And
it's almost like Tristan Wirfs, is it not? He was the fourth tackle left, and the Bucks got him at 12 or 13, whatever it was.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can remember this spring looking at mock drafts, and the first thing you look at every time is where do the edges fall? And so often, Bane was gone at 8, at 9. I think.
Oh, yeah.
I can remember when he was there at, like, 11, I wondered, like, wow, like, would the Bucks give up a 3 or something?
Move up. Yeah.
I wasn't expecting him to be there. So for them to be able to sit and have him fall all the way to them at 15, it's so rare that the most natural need for what you in a given class need lines up perfectly with the unexpected best talent.
It's your dream draft.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you could have run this draft 50 times, and I don't know that there's that many where Bane falls to 15 and they get the guy they want. So, and then what's cool about it is that as excited as they were on draft day, I think they've built on that throughout this whole summer. And it's all non-padded practices, but just in terms of his approach, his demeanor, everything he's shown to this point.
And his freaky bend. I mean,
it's
not natural. That it's full speed round the hoop when you're about a foot or two off the ground. I mean, you talk about a low natural center of gravity. He has it, and then some. I mean, this is a guy that just he can do some freakish things. And what I love about the Buccaneers is they've rarely had like that Goliath type of guy. I mean, Vita Vea is a Goliath in his own way, but I'm just saying like that they don't have like a Myles Garrett looking guy in the past. They've got. Derek Brooks, who when you see him walking down the street, even in his prime, you wouldn't think he's an all-pro linebacker, right? Warren Sapp had, kind of a sloppy body, but incredibly strong, one of the fastest cat-like, quick, agile guys.
Great feet,
Yeah, Mike Allstott, would he run a 4.8 or something, and pushing around a Jeep, you don't think of him. Say, we want him to be our running back. Warwick Dunn, diminutive Warwick Dunn. Rondé Barber, 5'10", 180. He's a future Hall of Famer. What? The Buccaneers have just made it a franchise history. They won Super Bowls with guys that just don't look the part. And so I think for Reuben Bain to come to the Isle of Misfit Toys, that has been Tampa Bay, welcome. Like, we've seen what your kind can do, and we're ready to see it again because I think this guy is going to be an absolute star. I agree with you. He is a defensive rookie of the year candidate and maybe a favorite. We'll see how he comes out of the gate. Guess what? Would it surprise you if he just lights it up in Cincinnati and just gets a sack or two out of the gate? The Bengals don't have a great offensive line, but I mean, I could just see this guy just the way he snatched that hat and walked out the draft day. I could just see him just saying, I'm here to put on a show in week one.
Well, in practice is where he's going to make a difference because he's going to be going up against Tristan Wirfs and Luke Getteke, but like all those guys that practice with Reuben Bane are going to have to step it up or you're going to look silly. Like he's going to go so hard. We saw him hitting sleds and doing those circle drills and things. Like nobody goes that hard in OTAs. Nobody goes that hard in mini camp in shorts.
He's sprinting from drill to drill and everyone else is kind of light jogging. He is the first one there every time ready to go.
And that's the thing. You need those guys that set that tone and that do it during the week because if you can, if you practice that way and you can translate that on Sunday, Monday, Thursday, man, that's when you got something. And he's a young cat that's doing it. So what's the excuse of everybody else? I think he's the perfect player at the perfect time for them. And if he stays healthy and if Vita Vea stays on the team, I think you're going to see some great things from him this year.
when you look at the Bucks defense, in my opinion, and I'll let you either co-sign on this or leave it alone if you want. I love defense. That's my side of the ball. I've always loved it. I think this defense was too soft the last couple of years. Right. And you can have all of the rah-rah positive guys, the Winfields, the Davids. That type of leadership is fine. And we've seen that through the years, you know, with the John Lynches and the Derrick Brookses. They were a different kind of leader than Warren Sapp was. Sapp brought the nastiness, the edge. Hardy Nickerson was that way too, you know. And Jason Pierre-Paul and Dominican Sue were that way on that Super Bowl team. And when those two guys left the building, they took the nasty and the edge away. And I just think this team has been missing that. And now you bring in a guy, I'm going to show the mugshot again because why not? A'shaun Robinson. And no one's going to confuse him for a Pro Bowl player, right? He has not sniffed a Pro Bowl in his career at any stage. But still, you can bring some of that nasty. You can start the fight in practice, right? You can have that type of edge. You can be the enforcer. And then Reuben Bain is his partner in crime now, right? And those are some guys that I think, and Al-Qaeda Muhammad certainly has an edge about him too. I like that because that's a necessary ingredient. If you're going to be a nasty defense, you got to have some nasty leaders. And I don't think that this team has had that. And that's something you can't measure at the combine. It's an intangible, but it's a necessary intangible, is it not?
No, I think so. I mean, I think if you look just across the board at everybody they brought in that defensive front, the common link, the trait is just nasty. It's just being mean. Honestly, yeah. These are nice guys when we talk to them, but on the field, I think even more than anything that shows up in stats, in pressures, just the mentality. I think the way that these vets will bleed into the younger players.
Yeah.
There are some younger guys on this defensive front that are going to learn from them and get their, I guess demeanor is the best word, just the nastiness that you want to have from that front. They should be a much nastier front than they've been. And I think that's something they needed.
Yeah. And Rick, when you look at you know, this defense, and we've talked about, you know, being more physical. There were times last year, you think about the Jahmyr Gibbs game, with the Lions, the Henderson game, the Travion Henderson game against the Patriots. Those guys are ripping off big runs, finishing off the Buccaneers defense. And I think Todd Bowles wants to get back to the point of where you're not going to run on us and you will be in third and long. And when that happens, I can get more into my bag of tricks rather than, you know, than third and three. That's a lot different than third and eight. And when it comes to Todd Bowles' play sheet, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, you got to win on first down. I mean, you got to put teams in predictable passing situations so you can bring those pressures. And that again, with Vita Vea, I keep saying that.
Yep.
I don't know that teams will run on this football team. I don't know how you do it. I'll be honest with you. I think teams are going to have a difficult time. You know, when they had smallish fast guys, and it's an ever evolving league, right?
Yeah.
But when you had smallish fast guys at linebacker, you know, you got that because they were running outside. Now you get the bigger guys. You know, it
all of a sudden you got Sean McVay going, fine, I see your undersized fast linebackers. Here comes 12 and 13 personnel.
Here comes two tight ends right down your throat. Exactly. Yeah. If you get the big guys in there, now they're running tosses to the sideline all day. You know, so there's obviously a counterpunch to all of this, but I think that Todd just was like, you know, we have to be more stout inside. We have to hold up. You know, we can't get gashed like that. I mean, what was it? The third play or something like that. I know it was a swing pass to A'shaun Robinson that you got a one-on-one with Servassier Dennis, and he's you know, takes it to the house for 50 yards. Vashawn, he takes it to the house for 50 yards. So, you know, those plays can't happen. And so having said all that, like, the being a badass is fun, and it makes for a lot of good copy, but you better still be able to play. And a lot of these guys maybe are in the final years of their contracts. You mentioned Anzalone. I still think he has something in the tank.
Yeah.
They just want 1 year out of these guys. Give me 1-2 years of all you've got left, and I'm happy with that. But we don't know when they're going to hit the wall either. So you've got to develop players behind them, and that's why Josiah Trotter and guys like that are here. They'll have to do that next year and the year after. But for right now, for what they needed, I there was a definite emphasis on getting rid of the really polite guys. Yeah. And the biggest thing is, Can your teammates hold the other teammates accountable? You know, that's Jason right. Pierre-Paul, you saw it, guys. When Jason Pierre-Paul was here, I remember them going to Seattle and losing a game up there. And I think Carlton Davis got burned a few times, or maybe it was, no, it was Jamelle Dean.
Jamelle Dean.
A couple times in the end zone. That guy was going to tear that locker room apart. Yeah. He was scary. And you need that because that's a bad flight home, because that guy's so pissed off that you just don't want to lose. You don't want to disappoint him, because he's going to hold everybody accountable. And you need that on a football team. And I think they lacked a little bit of it the last year.
Yeah. Let's talk about one more rookie on the defensive side. Then we'll talk about a really fun rookie on the offensive side to wrap up the show here. But Keontae Scott is a player that the Buccaneers didn't think was going to be there in the fourth round. Too good to pass up. They already have a great nickel in Jacob Parrish. But in my opinion, and not just because I'm a K-Stater, I'm leaving my Wildcat bias at the door. Jacob Parrish played all 17 games last year and played really well. That's and he didn't miss any time this offseason. And we know Benjamin Morrison has really struggled with the hamstring injuries. Benjamin Morrison might be the odd man out in terms of the outside corner. It might be Jacob Parrish and Zion McCollum, and the Buccaneers have created a scenario where if that happens, they're like, that's fine. We'll put Keontae Scott in the slot where, guess what? He likes to blitz. He got sacks. That's something that we saw Parrish do and Tyke Smith do and get plenty of sacks. And, of course, Winfield blitzes out of the slot too. But, Greg, is there a danger? Should we caution the fans? It's fun to talk about all these shiny new toys, but Reuben Bain's a rookie. Josiah Trotter's a rookie. Keontae Scott is a rookie. They could have as many as five new starters on defense, three of which are rookies. Rick, you and I were here in 2002 when John Gruden mixed up the whole offense, right? And that took about half of the year for that offense to really kind of catch fire. The defense back in the day was wearing the superhero cape. That Gruden offense took half the year to finally gel and come together with all those new pieces. And those were veterans, Rick. Those were guys that knew how to play, right? But, Greg, you've got three potential starters on defense that could be rookies, and there's an even longer learning curve there for those guys, right?
Oh, yeah. And this is a schedule that doesn't help them out. You come out of the gates with the Bengals, you got the Cowboys, you got the Packers in the first five games of the season. So they're going to get a lesson in what the NFL offenses can look like in a hurry, how well they can handle that, how quickly this scheme lines up and is comfortable for them is a big part of whether they're 3-2 or 1-4 coming out of the gates here. I think Keontae Scott, if you watch what he did at Miami, how weaponized he was, he seems perfect for what Todd likes to do with his nickel. I think he had 14 tackles for loss, which is just a crazy number for a DB. But I think to have all the different interchangeable pieces now with Winfield and Tyke at safety and Parrish potentially, I think you could see some dime too, honestly, because some of these guys that are nickels play like linebackers and can blitz like linebackers. And I think that's, if everyone's healthy, it seemed like last year, no matter what, somebody was hurt, whether it's Izzy or hurt or Tyke was hurt, Winfield was hurt. If they have all those safeties healthy, there could be a really fun look with three, if not four of them on the field, and some of them acting like linebackers that are just a little bit quicker and a little bit smaller.
Yeah. Rick, when you saw Ted Hurst out there, he didn't look like a rookie, man. Or
no
pounds. No one's going to say he's anywhere close to Mike Evans other than he's like an inch shorter, but that's still pretty good height. And the Buccaneers do kind of need like a bigger receiver, because you look at J-Mac and you look at Chris Godwin and Emeka Buka, they're all kind of 6'1", 205 or so. But this guy's a little bit of a different. He is an X factor. He is a player that can do some of those Mike Evans things that Baker Mayfield loved to do with him, which is those little lob passes up there into the back of the end zone, those little fades in the lower part of the red zone there. And he was a player, too, that was incredibly dangerous at Georgia State. Catching a five-yard slant and having the 4.4 speed to take it the distance. He looked really good at the Senior Bowl when I saw him there. Jason Lightman in the third round, Chris Godwin, Jalen McMillan, Ted Hurst, Tyke Smith, Jacob Parrish. That's kind of become a real sweet spot for the Buccaneers in the draft. They found some really good players in the third round with Emeka Buka, with Chris Godwin, with Jalen McMillan. We saw Tez Johnson, what he could do last year. And now you have Ted Hurst. Can the sum of the parts make up for the lack of the whole that is Mike Evans leaving and going to San Francisco? Rick?
Yeah, well, it's going to have to, right? Because there's no one guy that's going to do what Mike Evans can do. But you're right about this group of receivers. They don't have this is your true X receiver, right? This is your big, physical, fast guy that when you put him outside, defenses have to decide, are we really going to cover this guy one-on-one here, right? Is that what we're doing? Or are we going to give him some cloud coverage or some double coverage? We're going to lean towards his side. And that creates a lot of opportunities for those other guys. And if you don't have that, now you're in trouble because he can run by you. He's a big physical guy that can just run by you. And that's what Mike Evans would do. You know, he didn't look like a burner, but he'd get up to speed. And before you knew it, he was past the defense. And so I think Hurst, and just watching him with his body control, you know, his ability to, to kind of box guys off the way Mike Evans did. He's a lot faster. I think he's faster than Mike Evans for sure. But he's such a young player, and he played at the Georgia State level where he dominated, which is great. He's got a lot to learn about the NFL game. These are grown-ass men up here, you know, that he's going to be going against. But the quicker that he can be a threat, and I think you'll see it pretty fast. They'll have him in there pretty quick. The better this offense is going to be. I think Baker's going to love him. And in the red zone, that's where he's really going to show up because you have to have those big targets with those fades. And you know, I played Madden once in a while, and anytime you run the fade in Madden to Mike Evans, it's always a touchdown. Call it every single time. You need that to become the case with Ted Hurst.
Yeah, and when you look you mentioned Baker Mayfield's going to, you know, find him and become friendly with him. Jake Browning already has, and we're going to see a lot of Jake Browning because we're not going to see Baker Mayfield in August, probably. We're probably not going to see Chris Godwin, probably not going to see Mecca Buka, certainly not going to see Jalen McMillan. If I'm Jalen McMillan, I'm saying, Coach, don't even try me in this season. I'll be ready to go week one in Cincinnati, but I'm not playing any preseason games. But we're going to see a lot of Tez Johnson. We're going to see a lot of Ted Hurst. I've already gone on record. I think Ted Hurst is going to be the leading receiver for the Buccaneers.
Wow.
This preseason. I think he's going to be Mr. August. So we shall see. Boy, that was a fun, fast hour, wasn't it, gentlemen?
No, it was fast. Yeah.
Can't wait to do this with you guys every week. And it's going to be right here on Bucks Collective. Make sure that you hit the subscribe button. It's free. And also hit the like button. We'll also take super chats too, folks. If you want to super chat us, we will answer your questions. And reminder, next week, the Buccaneers are going to interrupt our regularly scheduled program here because they have a night practice that we're going to be at from 7 to 9. So we're going to have next week's show at 5:30 before that night practice right here at Bucks Collective. And then we're going to be at 7 o'clock Tuesday nights all the way through football season. And that's great because we can recap what happened during the games on Sunday or Mondays. We can go over any type of injuries that might have happened because we'll have that news by then. We can also take a look ahead at the matchup on deck for your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So greatly appreciate everybody for joining us. Make sure that you hit the subscribe button again. Also with notifications, when we go live, you will get that notification as well. And aside from next week's Audible at 5:30, we will see you next Tuesday night here on the Bucks Collective.